not embrace. I know in some states it's illegal. Truly, it is. It is the Karelcast. I am Karel. Have you heard? There are sharks in the water. Sharks, don't go in, especially in Santa Cruz. Ah, we're going to die. Now, it's funny because there's this shark hysteria along the coast, and it's summer, and it's like a scene from Jaws. I have a great thing on my website, reallykarel.com, of Chris Christie floating above the shark in Jaws. You hear the music, because of him on the beach, you know, so it's a great meme. Go watch it. But really, the shark hysteria I haven't seen since my youth. And y'all don't want to do this to your kids, okay? Don't do this to your children, okay? Because after I saw Jaws, you could not drag me into the ocean. Hell to the no. I saw Jaws. I know what was going to happen to me if I went into the ocean. I stayed out of the water from 1976 well into the 90s. It wasn't until I went to Hawaii that I finally just had to say, F it. I'm here with my boyfriend. My friend Karen lives here. There are sharks. I got all educated about them. I'm like, we're just going to have to deal. Now I have swum with many a shark, and I'm not making that up. Karen Dittman, who's going to be on our show hopefully on Friday to talk dental tourism with her dentist from Mexico, she will attest that we have swum at reefs off of Maui. There's a crater you go out to, Molokini Crater, and the boats park right there. And you look right, Ember, they do. And you look down, and there's a 12-foot reef shark swimming about 10 feet below you. And I'm there with Thea, Miss Diva, with her hair like all out in the water, all rhythm is a dance all everywhere. And she's wearing the brightest bikini that the world could, you know, like ever, you know, have on. And there we are. There's that shark. What do we do? Nothing. What did the shark do? Nothing. What do most sharks want to do with people? Not a damn thing. Don't like them. We don't even taste good. They spit us out. I mean, they do. It's real. It's real, Ember. They spit us out. They just don't like us. No, they don't like us because we don't taste good. At least not to a shark. We're one of their least favorite foods. They did a survey. You know how they did this, Ember? I'm telling you, girl. They dragged stuff behind a boat, like a dead cow, a dead pig, which tastes the most like human, by the way, just so you know that, and then some other animals. And they dragged it through shark-infested waters to see which the sharks ate in which order. And guess what? The pig was last. Sharks don't like pork. Which means, since humans taste like pork, and we do, that they wouldn't like humans. So they don't eat us. I know you hear, human remains found in a shark's stomach. Yeah, they'll take a good-sized bite out of us. But they won't finish us off unless they're starving, because they don't like us. So your chance of getting bitten by a shark, well, you know, it depends on where you're swimming. I'll never forget, true story, Karen, I should have Karen get on the phone right now and tell the story of Popoia. Because you want to talk about sharks. You people up in Santa Cruz, you people here in the coast along Long Beach, y'all want to talk about the sharks on this summer? Baby, Karen and I have been where the sharks were in Hawaii at a place called Popoia. It's a little island that's like a quarter mile offshore that we swam to every time we went. And we were there. This is a true story. We get to Hawaii with my friend Sean Devereaux. And it's me and Karen and Sean Devereaux. And we've gone there to spread Andrew's ashes. So this is in 2001 because he loved Hawaii. And we do the ritual of landing, but we had an afternoon landing. So we do the ritual of landing at 3 in the afternoon. We get our luggage, we go by snorkel bobs first thing, and we all get our inner island snorkel package for $10, our fins and our snorkel mask and our snorkel and our stuff, the goo they give you to not get all fogged up. We get our snorkel bobs right there by the airport. We go over the Pali Lookout. If you've been to Hawaii, to Oahu, you know what I'm talking about. We go over the Pali Lookout, and once down the other side of the Pali, of course, we stop at the top of the Pali and we sing. Because you have to, because it's really beautiful. And when you stand there and there's this gorgeous green valley and there's just picturesque houses and the wind is just blowing and you're standing there, honey, you've got to burst out in song. I mean, if you don't, you're just not a human. So, of course, I did. First time Karen took me there, she had a camera ready because she knew I would burst out in song, and I did. So we go down the Pauly. We get on our snorkels. Sean, and Sean's a marine biologist at the Long Beach Aquarium of the Pacific. Now he's the head of their volunteer services there. And we swim out to Popo'ia, this quarter mile. And when you get near Popo'ia, the natural reef comes up and you can walk probably 200 feet. And you're a quarter mile offshore. And you're walking. You're in ankle deep water. Well, one thing we never really do at Popo'ia is read any of the literature there. Had we read it, we would have known there had been 6 shark attacks in that water in the last month. But we didn't read that. Don't read before you swim or eat. And so we swam out to Popo'ia, Sean and Karen and I, and at the buoy, there's a buoy halfway. And I wasn't in good physical shape at the time. And I grabbed onto the buoy and I'm thinking, I could stop here. But then I saw a sea turtle and I swam with it. And I saw a giant eel and I swam with it. Notice how I just did that on camera? Because that's what I did in the water. I was like, ooh, go on, Mr. Eel. Let me just, ooh. I felt like James Brown up in there. So, ooh, go on, Mr. Eel. Yes. And so I made it to Popo'ia. So we're all out there and we're talking. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. The shore is a quarter mile away with lush Hawaii behind it. And we have waterproof cameras and we're taking pictures. And then we said, okay, well, it's time to go back. And so we start swimming and I slow down. And Sean says, Boulay, don't do that. And I said, do what? He said, slow down. I said, why? He said, I didn't want to say anything, but as we're sitting here staring at the sunset over that wonderful volcano there, sharks feed at sunset. They feed anywhere from 100 to 300 yards offshore. Okay, well, Sean, how many yards offshore are we? We're about 150 yards offshore. What should we do, Sean? Swim. Swim as if your life depends on it, he says to me and Karen. And the three of us look like something in a cartoon, beelining towards the shore. And we get up on the sand and we're... This lady's sitting there on the beach. She's like, what's the matter? What's the matter? And we said, we had to get out of the water. We had to get out of the water because there's sharks in the water. Sharks in the water. And she handed us a flyer that had said there was a shark attack there that morning and that we weren't supposed to be swimming at Popo'ia. One of the many times Karen has nearly gotten me killed in Hawaii. I cannot go over the times during the summer, winter, spring, or fall that woman has nearly gotten me. Oh, just walk on this lava. Not telling me that the lava just formed and that there's bubbling lava underneath. And when it goes, poof, you feel the ground shake because it's about to, and you could fall in and be fricasseed. Oh, no, just walk over here. Oh, just crawl through this cave right here. And we get to this beautiful beach where they filmed this movie, You've Got to Come. First, you have to crawl over that fence there, though, that says, do not crawl over. Oh, okay. And then walk down this thing called the moonscape by the blowhole. Okay. Oh, and go stick your head near the blowhole, because right before the water comes through, it sounds like the earth is exhaling. But here's the deal. Be sure you move your head before the wave comes through, or it'll take your head off. What? You want me to do this? I did it. It does sound like that. We really did walk through a cave in the side of a cliff that water rushes into every time a wave hits and empties out the cave. If you're in there, you're taken out. And we get through to the other side, and there is a ledge 6 inches thick that you then have to cling to the side of this wall, because if you fall, it is just horrible waves up against the rock. And you do this for, you know, with your back against it all, skibby, skibby, skibby. And I tell you, when you get down on the beach, it is the most beautiful beach in the world that you'll ever be on. And then there's a lava tube right next to you that you walk through the entire bottom of a hill in a lava tube and come up on the other side of the highway, which you then have to cross to get back to your car. This is death. So you want to talk to me about some sharks in Santa Cruz? Are you kidding me? Buck up. It's the ocean. They're sharks. if you go in there, it's an implied risk. It's like being on the road and implying you could get hit by someone texting. It's the same thing. But your chances of being hit by someone texting are far greater than your chances of being eaten by a shark. And here's even better news that I looked up today. In America, your chances of being shot publicly by a gun are 3 times being eaten by a shark. So you'll be killed at the mall buying the bathing suit more than you will be by the shark. So let's just not be on a shark mania here. Because the other sharks we got to deal with are up in Washington, D.C., and they are carrying on. Oh, my God, the right is saying that Jared Kushner is the patron savior's son. He's like Jesus Christ. He's the son of our Lord. He can do no wrong. The left is saying, treason, 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 drag him down here and hook him up. Meanwhile, you know what I'm saying? I'm saying F it all, okay? F it all. Because if you're watching me right now on reallycorel.com or at Facebook.com/reallycorel, you'll see there's been a background here behind me, okay? And that background is pure white, and there's this rift going through it, okay? And it's a photograph from today's news. And what you're seeing if you're watching me, or if you go back to my website, reallycorel.com, any time of the day or night and watch the video, you'll see an ice chunk the size of Delaware that has fallen into the sea. There it is, right there, if you're looking. That's an ice chunk from today's news that has fallen into the sea. It's enormous. It's 2,100 miles. And it's 600 feet thick. It weighs over a trillion. It's just big. And it fell off. It just fell off. Like certain things do as you age, you know, it just fell off. And I saw this thing here behind me today in the news with another story. Now, if you consider that Trump was alone at the G20, which that was all about climate change. And so if you consider the United States is not signing on. If you consider that within 30 years, summer in Las Vegas will be the same temperature as summer in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. If you consider all of that and this chunk here falling off into the sea, well, there's a few conclusions you have to make. And guess what? Lucky for us, a few learned scientists have made those conclusions. I will tell you what they concluded when we come back. And after that, there may not even be a third segment because, well, why?
Hey, do you need a great place to host your website? Well, all of my sites are hosted at Midphase. That's Midphase, M-I-D-P-H-A-S-E, midphase.com. If you need to host a website, they're the place to do it. It's easy and affordable, midphase.com.
What of ourselves remain?
The Carellcast. I am Carell, described by John Fenton at Progressive Voices Network, where my show does very well, by the way, so thank you for that. Progressive Voices heard on Tuned In. I'm one of their most popular nightly shows, and they don't put me on till midnight, so hey, thank you for that. I mean that. Anyway, John Fenton described my show as loud, too much loud music. Oh, old people. I love old people. Not that he's much older than me, but, you know. There are old people, and then there are old people. I'm sorry, I know more music than the millennials, so, you know. This is my SodaStream mineral water here. For those of you watching, I made that mineral water for nothing, for pennies. I saw a whole thing of mineral water in the grocery store the other day. And yes, I'm going to tell you from the last segment what the scientists said so we can just slit our wrists. But really, I mean, just start doing whatever you want. I saw this whole like display of mineral water at Smart and Final for 50 cents a bottle. So it was just like 6 foot by 6 foot by 4 foot high mineral water, okay, in plastic bottles. And the amount of resources that it took to get that carbonated water in those plastic bottles, all the oil, all the everything, to this spot in this store when if everybody just had in their kitchen, like, just standard, when a kitchen was built, they built a carbonator in it, a soda stream. I mean, why not? Everybody seems to drink some sort of carbonated drink. Why isn't it standard in every kitchen? I don't understand. And if you don't have one and you do drink carbonated beverages and you don't get a soda stream, then what are you doing? You're just pissing money. I mean, that's ridiculous. Ugh. And they're not an advertiser. It's just that, you know what, the things cost $15 to refill at Staples. And that gives you, you know, gallons of stuff. And you recycle your own bottles, and you can add flavors, and you can come up with natural flavors. I always put, like, orange, lemon, you know, juice from a lemon, juice from an orange, in with the sparkling water. Steve tends to put wine, but whatever. It works. God, okay. Enough about that. It's not enough about that. It is exactly what the entire show today is about, the same effing thing, which is that we know what the hell to do. We know what the hell is better, and we won't do it. Scientists announced today, if we were any kind of, in a book, you know, like, or in a movie, enlightened society, if we were truly a society based in intelligence, if the Einsteins of the world had won and also had an interest in politics, because that's the problem. People like Einstein deplore politics. If only they could be political, these people. Because scientists have announced we are entering an extinction-level event, an ELE, E-L-E. Remember the meteor movie where they named the meteor ELE because it was going to kill us? Meteors only took out the dinosaurs once. There's been five other events. We're entering the sixth. We're entering it. Not we might enter it if we don't change this or that. Nope, 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 nope. They're now accepting the worst-case scenarios as the accepted scenarios. Instead of trying to prevent a 4 degree hike everywhere, they're just assuming that's going to happen. And we will lose Miami. You do not buy real estate in Miami if you are under 30 years old. Don't do it. Because within 30 years, we are going to lose Miami. And you guys are like, Carell, that's a ridiculous... Nope. Parts of Miami over the next 3 decades will be gone to us. Completely gone. It is going to happen. We have entered the extinction level event. Vertebras are all but gone. Invertebrates are all but gone. Everything is becoming extinct except one thing: rich humans. In this report, it says that the overconsumption and gluttony of the 1% is directly proportional to the change in global warming. Wow. I mean, wow. Now rich people have killed the planet. And this is it. There is no discussion about this. This is going to happen. Within the next 40 years, temperatures in Las Vegas and Los Angeles are going to be in the hundreds on a continual basis. And within the next 50 years, two-thirds of American cities, you will not be able to go outside during the day. You will have to stay in air conditioning, which the air conditioning will help kill the environment even more. But you'll die without it. 2,000 people a day died in France. Don't you remember? That's not an anomaly now. They say that's going to happen every year. We did it. Look behind me. Something the size of Delaware just fell into the ocean. On the same day, scientists say we've entered the sixth extinction level event. Not we can avoid it if. Honey, we've entered it. It is the lead story at NHK. It is the lead story on Sky News, BBC's lead story. We ain't talking about it.
Hey, if you want your phone to be hotter than a Samsung 7 in a carry-on luggage, too soon, then get my app, the Carellcast app. It's for iOS, it's for Android, it's for your phone or your iPad or device to make it a whole lot smarter at the App Store of your choice.
The Carellcast. I am Carell, having tech difficulties today, but so what? So what? So is planet Earth. this thing just fell off of us. You're having, planet Earth is having tech difficulties today. Meanwhile, in Santa Cruz and Long Beach, they're freaking out about sharks. Oh my God, sharks. and yet you are more apt to be killed in your car on your way to the beach than you are by a shark. So just calm down. Calm down, everybody. James Woods, calm down. He gets a calm down today. James Woods, the ultra right-wing conservative a-hole who hasn't made a decent movie in years, right here in my little old Orange County in a Pride Festival that I went to the very first one and helped start, actually, the Orange County Pride Festival. This couple, I'm sure you've seen this now, they took their little kid to the Pride Festival because their little kid likes to wear dresses and makeup. And they both had little signs that said, I support my kid that wears dresses and makeup, and, you know, if you don't like it, too bad. Well, James Woods took it upon himself to tweet, because that's what we do nowadays when we, yeah, that's the thing, right? He took it upon himself to tweet, you know, you guys are idiots. Wait till the kid grows up. He'll want to, you know, shove your dismembered bodies in a garbage dump somewhere. That's what he said. I'm making that up. That's what he said. So Neil Patrick Harris, the arbiter now of all things gay, between him, Anderson Cooper, and Andy Cohen, three of the whitest people on the planet, there is no other gay opinion. You either agree with Anderson, Andy, and Neil, or you are evil. I happen to love Neil, so I agree with him. So I'm fine. I'm good with the gays. I like Neil. I think he's a great host of anything he does. I love how he's managed his career and his openness in being gay. I think he's fabulous. Great role model. I tweeted Neil today, my video. I said, well, while you're fighting with James Woods about being transphobic, here, have a little inclusion, have a little diversity. He won't retweet it or anything, but I wanted him to see it. So anyway, you know, from the what the hell, we did the segment today needs to be the what the hell. Okay, what the hell. What the hell, James Woods? You're just sitting at home watching your Twitter feed, and this inclusive family of love and inclusion comes across, and it's just too much for you. You just can't take it. You think in some way they're ruining this kid's life by immortalizing his childhood. It's his childhood. This is how he chose to be as a child. Now, if he's ever ashamed of that when he grows up, that's a shame that you and others are going to put in him, because right now he doesn't have any shame, okay? You're the one bringing shame to the game, you gray-headed old fark. But not to worry, super gay Neil Patrick Harris stepped in and vanquished you, as he should have. So, yeah, he did. He tweeted out to James Woods, you know, what a moron he was. He's like, I know that family, you know, because James Woods says, wait until the poor kid grows up, realizes what you've done, and stuffs both of you dismembered into a freezer and a garbage bag. That's really something great. Just because they stood there and said, I love my gender creative son and my son wears dresses and makeup. Get over it. Gender creative. I love that. Don't you? I'm gender creative. I am gender creative. I really am. I am a man and very creative as one. So I'm gender creative. I wear makeup and sequins and bugle beads. Hell yes. Frilly laces and all of that. Now, NPH says, utterly ignorant and classless. Mr. Woods, I'm friends with this family. You know not of what you speak and should be ashamed of yourself. They're vanquished by Neil Patrick Harris. And when you have been taken to task by Neil Patrick Harris, honey, you've been read. You have been read. Mm-hmm. So that's from the what the hell were they thinking? You know, what's up with them? Oh, here's another one. This is just great. There was a show on reality TV, The Wills Family, because someone thought it would be good to give an Arkansas clan a reality TV show, okay? And they got the reality TV show after doing something God knows what on America's Got Talent, okay? So here we have this clan of Toby Willis, or Wills, all right, and his whole family, his wife Brenda, and 12 children. 12. They performed Irish-inspired roots music as the Wills Clan, advancing to the quarterfinals of America's Got Talent, and then on TLC in two seasons of the Wills Clan TV show. Well, it appears Daddy Wills will be going to jail, actually. Wills will be, because he's dorking 9 and 12-year-olds. And that's so vile and disgusting to me. To be a father of 12 and be dorking 9 and 12-year-olds? Icky. Icky horrible. And his life will be hell in jail. But still, ew, I mean, couldn't we just kill him? I mean, I'm sorry. You see, I hate that. But he'll never be well. He'll never be well. That's a sexuality. We won't admit that, but it is. Pedophilia is a sexuality, and that's pedophilia. These, we call people pedophiles sometimes when they sleep with 15-year-olds and 16. That's not pedophilia, actually. This is pedophilia. 9 years old, that's pedophilia. 12 years old, that's pedophilia. So this guy's a pedophile, and he'll never change. He will always be a pedophile. So what do? Chemical castration kind of works, but doesn't. It takes away their ability to do it, but not their desire, because, again, you can be a celibate straight person, you know, but you're still straight. You can be a celibate gay, but you're still gay. So there can be celibate pedophiles, but they're still pedophiles. So what do? I don't know. And he was on reality TV. That's just icky. Icky. Oh, God, and he has kids. 12 kids. That's just icky. I mean, that's just icky. All right, from my other things in the news that I was looking at today, scientists warn of biological annihilation. Say mass extinction event is currently happening on Earth. Doesn't that just want you to say F it all? Okay, well, we're done as a species. F it all, baby. Consume what you want to, spend what you want to, go where you want to, live where you want to, take what you want. What does it matter, right? We're all a bunch of rude, uncivil, ignorant animals that are heading for the end. You know? Now, they say we won't be here for it. Although 2100 ain't that far away. 2100 is 83 years away. And they say that it'll all happen by 2100. So in the next 83 years, that's not that short a time. If you're 20 today, you could see, pee it, detox. Uh-huh. That's what that is. And it's going to happen uncontrollably over the next 3 days. Get over it. I got a fan on me. I am free of the Percocet. And it's wanting me to sneeze and have the Bagoosey skin and sweat and do all that. But you can't let that drug in your life for too long. And it was in it for 3 weeks now. And uh-uh. So after 3 weeks, it's bye-bye. So anyway, I'll be sneezing. Sorry, I can't black it out every time I do it because I'm going to do it a lot. Scientists warn of, when besides, 83 years, we're toast. I mean, what's it all matter? What does any of it matter now? I mean, really? Within 83 years, we're screwed. Look behind me. This thing just fell into the ocean today. We're pretty much effed. I mean, it's just, I think we are all deluding ourselves that there is a bright future on planet Earth. Stephen Hawking isn't. Elon Musk isn't. Neither of them think there's a bright future on planet Earth. And I got to tell you, after that report came out and after this fell into the ocean here, I pretty much don't either. So I'm 55. I'll see the start of the first third of it. Wow, I'll see the opening third of the end of the world. That's pretty, wow. Wow. If you're 50 or so, you're going to see the first opening third of the end of the world, because that's what they're talking about. I know that y'all think it's all just stupid and bullcrap, because we have learned to disregard so much. Though they'll fix it, you know, whatever. We have learned to just disregard it. Oh, we don't have to pay attention to it. You know, it doesn't matter. Someone will fix it. Someone will do something. Well, here's the deal. It's not going to be fixed, and it's the truth. Over the next 83 years, most of our planet is going to become uninhabitable for humans without climate control. Period. Just end of story. And if you're a weak human in any way, hungry, thirsty, old, and you don't have the climate control, you will die. And that's just that. And that's happening now. Old people in France who don't have air conditioning and a heat wave hits. 2,000 a day died last time. More than ISIS ever killed. We are being shown a future that is as dystopian as it gets, and we won't turn it around. And I don't want to say, and all we want to talk about is Russia and healthcare and all of that. When the real problems start happening, we will realize how stupid we were to argue over health care. Of course everybody should have it. Health care for all. Of course everybody should have a national salary, because it's going to take everybody pitching in to save America. Because we are going to lose Florida, or a lot of it. Orlando will stay, but most everything from there down, and Miami will be gone. We're going to lose parts of the Gulf Coast. All those, you know, inconvenient truth scenarios that our former vice president painted, those are going to happen now. Mainland China is going to lose tons of areas along their shores, and they're going to have to relocate millions and millions of people. Over the next 5 to 10 years, there's going to be mass migrations. Look at the problem 4 million people from Syria has caused. What happens when 10 million, 20 million, 50 million have to move? Now, I don't want to sit here on this Wednesday and be some sort of prophet of doom, but this is going to happen. This is in our future, and I'm going to see the first third of it, I hope. And I don't hope. I wish I could see someone turn it around, but there isn't. There is no turning around for what we've done already. We can only mitigate the damage now. And we won't, because we're going to argue over, you know, like Trump. He should be gone. His son, they're saying now it's not a crime because he actually didn't get the information. Okay, maybe it's not a crime, but it's one more reason the American people want him gone. Okay, it's one more reason the American people want him gone. I can't believe it does that, by the way. I can't believe the Mac software just interrupts me like that. I can't. Maybe I can launch something and say, don't ever do that to me again, you dirty bastard. I've been doing stuff on this computer for 2 days now, and I'll just be sitting here, and all of a sudden, a call will come through on the computer. And I'm like, look, Mac, I know you're thinking you're being nice to me, but don't. You know, I do stuff where I'm recording, and I don't want you answering the phone. So anyway, I'm sure that there's a way to do it. I just don't know how. So I think I'll turn off calls from iPhone. I think that'll do it. I just checked that. I went to preferences in FaceTime and checked calls from iPhone. Unchecked it. Speaking of America's Got Talent, they are milking this death of Brandon Rogers. He was a contestant. He died in a tragic car crash. Now they're showing his audition and his life as an ode to his parents, and it's all so touching. I'm thinking, this is great for ratings. You know, it's great for ratings. They're milking this dead guy. I guess you'd probably want it, you know, if you wanted to be famous. I guess if you died, you'd still want to be famous. Extremely rare shark attack on kayaker triggers 4-day restrictions on the Santa Cruz beaches right during summer, right out of Jaws. You've got to close the beaches. You've got to close the beaches. Oh, my God. No, you don't. You really don't. It's a danger. You know, you go in the ocean, a shark might get you. If you don't accept the risk, stay out of the ocean. All right, we'll be back with Joe Scarborough. Oh, you got to hear this. This is good. This is really good, actually.
You know, anytime you're feeling down and feel like you can't reach your goal, I want you to go to lifeinsegments.com, where you'll find 3 seasons of my TV show from Free Speech TV. Now, everyone told me that show wasn't going to happen, but now there's 3 seasons of it there for you at lifeinsegments.com. Believe.
My goodness, it is the Carell Cast. I am Carell. So very glad you are joining me. I am almost out of here. Joe Scarborough is leaving the GOP. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. This big announcement on the Colbert Show. Mika Brzezinski, the woman who bled from her face, the woman who bleeds. Mika, the woman who bleeds for us all. Mika Brzezinski has bled for us all. She is a martyr. She is a martyr. And she is a martyr with 3 book deals. That's right. She just signed a 3-book deal. Yep. Insult me, Mr. President. Please. Please insult me. Hell, I'll sleep with you if it gets me 3 book deals with Penguin House. You know what I'm saying, people? I'd do it. I'd take one for the team. If I thought I'd get him out of office, I'd sleep with him. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would. Unfortunately. I mean, I could just close my eyes and think of jewelry or something. I don't know. Whatever. Because, you know, I'd get a book deal and a movie deal and everything. So, really, I would just get on my knees and put pillows under them and search for it and lift a few rolls and just close my eyes and pretend that, you know, Al Parker or dated reference, but whatever, Jeff Stryker, whoever, I don't care, somebody is there and finish, which probably wouldn't take long, and be sure the video camera was running and have it live streaming. And then when I walked out of the office, he wouldn't even be president anymore. Because his followers, they will take a lot of crap, okay? It's obvious. His followers have taken everything. But if they found him with a live boy, they'd even take finding him with a dead girl. But finding him with a live boy, and Trump would be out of there, honey. I'd do it. I'll do it if that's what it takes. We need a tranny that looks like melanoma, or a drag queen. We need a drag queen that looks like melanoma, and have the drag queen, you know, just do the dirty and let him do it, you know, and then take the pictures. Anyway, Joe Scarborough and Mika, after helping elect Donald Trump, after being in Donald Trump's corner, after having Donald Trump on their show doing pro-Trump segments, letting Trump look at the questions, after all of the shucking and jiving they did for Donald Trump, now that he's been a meanie, they've decided that Joe is leaving the Republican Party and becoming an independent. Remember, he was an elected official, so that's a big deal. And Mika is going to write 3 books about it all. So that's what's going on with Joe and Mika, okay? So don't worry, they're going to be fine. It was a trying time. I know it was because they went away on vacation, and it was horrible. Oh, my God, the beaches and the VIP treatment and all was just probably terrible. She probably couldn't even just console herself through the entire luxury $100,000 a night vacation. I'm sure that she was devastated, like so many of you would be if the president... Oh, wait. The president has gone after American citizens. And, oh, well, wait. They didn't get what Mika got. They got laughed at, criticized, ridiculed. Anyway, okay, so Joe Scarborough is leaving the Republican Party. And, you know, defections are great, okay? They should be running like rats from the Titanic. I mean, truly, defections are great. But they need some bigger Republican to leave. You know, really, they need a big, respected Republican, like George W. Bush Jr. and Sr., if they want to do anything for their war criminal selves to help redeem themselves. They and Dick Cheney and others should get together and announce they're leaving the Republican Party. There should be some high-level defections based on what's going on. The problem is, most Republicans like what Donald Trump is doing. And most Republicans know that while he's being the buffoon in the Oval Office, Mike Pence is going behind the scenes and furthering the agenda of the Koch brothers legislatively and getting their way. So Mike Pence is behind the scenes doing horrible dirty work at behest of the Koch brothers while the buffoon in chief keeps the media entertained. It's a perfect scenario for them. It's why they haven't done anything to change it. It's why they haven't talked impeachment or anything, really. Because it works for them. It works beautifully for them. Let him shuck and jive and be the buffoon while they go do evil behind the scenes with the vice president and Mike and Paul Ryan and McConnell and all these people. It's their dream come true. No one's watching them. The criminals are free to run the store because they've got a buffoon in charge. Wow. Meanwhile, if you look behind me, over here, that fell into the ocean today. We're screwed. And science announced the beginning of the 6th extinction level event for planet Earth. So we need to just start partying for the rest of our lives. Just party. Because, honey, it appears we're going to be the last ones to wear this place out. So just go wear it out. I am Carl B. He want to be something, hurt anybody.
You're listening to The Carell Show.
Carell.
independent media means just that. And if you want to keep independent media like me on air, then you've got to support it. That's why at my website, reallycorrell.com, there's a way to click on the Patreon logo and support me with a monthly donation. Please do so. Reallycorrell.com.
Crowdcast. I am Carell. I've spoken to him before because he made two wonderful movies. Well, he's made several wonderful movies, but Korngal and Restrepo were two that I really loved because I have many friends who have been in country multiple times, and this sort of showed me their world. Plus, I've been to Afghanistan and Iraq, so it was very, very interesting to see. And I'm thrilled to have Sebastian Younger here with me now. His new book is Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging. He's also the author of War and the Perfect Storm, of course, as you know. Now, Sebastian, I don't want to make light of your topic, but given what's just happened with Trump winning the nomination, with our president saying actually how kind of dangerous that is, that the other world leaders are very nervous about this, and with the divide that's going on in the country, it's almost as if what is happening exemplifies the premise of your book, which is that we have these soldiers coming home, and they're coming home broken to a broken America. And they then long for the solidarity of the brotherhood they had back in Afghanistan or Iraq. Let's talk about that. The country is only breaking more. How is that affecting our veterans?
Well, I mean, first of all, just as a sort of semantic matter, I think very few veterans are psychologically broken by the experience of combat. I mean, only 10% of the military even engages in combat. And most of those soldiers, frankly, come out of it often traumatized, right, but also stronger in other ways. Right. I think the real loss for psychologically, the real loss for soldiers, even ones who weren't in combat, which is, of course, the other 90% of the army, is that they had a year. They spent a year in a platoon, deployed. They're sleeping together, eating together, doing tasks and missions together. They basically live a life that reproduces our evolutionary past extremely closely.
Yeah.
And then they come back to a country. It's a modern society. It's very individualistic. People often live alone. Suburbs can be lonely places. They don't have the security and comfort of their brothers in their platoon. And it's a radical transition that many have a hard time making. And then finally, as you say, at this moment in our history, there are really dangerous political, economic, racial, social divisions that some people feel are actually threatening the core of our democracy and our unity as a country. And that, you know, if you fight for this country, you don't want to come home to see the country fighting itself.
Well, yeah, I mean, Noam Chomsky, who I consider to be one of the smartest men alive, professor emeritus at MIT, inventor of cognitive science, basically came out and said, and I'm not being partisan here, I'm just repeating what he said, that the Republican Party and what it is currently doing has made it the most dangerous organization in history. So they're told to go fight ISIS and Al-Qaeda because they're the danger. And then they come home and they have the media saying the real danger is actually right here. That's got to be conflicting and hard for them.
You know, I think the Nazis would give Noam Chomsky's GOP a run for their money. I think that's a vast, vast oversimplification. And I think Democrats have also acted just heinously.
Absolutely, right. Yeah. I mean, and they were on his list as well. They weren't that far below the Republicans. It's that, you know, neither party is. Let's look at veterans' rights. We had just 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, someone in charge of the VA talking about the wait time. And he actually said that, well, it's the experience and not necessarily the wait time. You know, there's long wait lines at Disneyland, but people like it. And you're a veteran and you've come back to America and you might have to deal with the VA and you hear the head of the VA say, well, so what if you have to wait? You got to wait at Disneyland. I mean, that's got to mess with their minds.
Well, he wasn't just running the VA. He's a veteran.
Right.
And I think he may, you know, I think he probably would agree with you in private that he said something really stupid,
yeah,
which we've all done. I mean, the problem with the VA is that it's a massive, cumbersome bureaucracy,
yeah,
that has become both bloated and inefficient, which is a terrible combination, and is not serving our nation or our veterans well. They seem to be addressing addressing those problems probably not quickly enough.
So but, how do we serve our veterans better? How do we give them the sense of tribe and community that they need in order to integrate back into the world?
Well, we have to create a society that has those things in the first place.
Oh,
and
dear.
Veterans were,
are
part, but also, I mean, you know, like, just to be clear, I mean, veterans, before they were soldiers, before they were veterans, they were also part of the society that,
right.
you know, they create, they helped create the society they're returning to.
Right.
Modern society is extremely alienating. It has very high rates of suicide and depression and all kinds of other mental health issues, and that's the society that veterans return to, but it's also a society that's partly of their creation. I mean, it's a responsibility of all of us.
So how are they finding that sense of community over here? Are they finding each other? Is it through things like the VFW? I mean, how are they, or are they? Are they able to recreate it, or do they just really go on with the, I'd hate to think they have this, because you always hear it in drama, and Sebastian Younger is my guest. You always hear in these dramas, when you see a military drama, you'll hear the wife say, you love those soldiers more than you love me, or you want to go back to your brothers more than you want to be with me. It's a really, it's a real issue that families face, that when a soldier comes back, they sometimes think they want to be with their platoon more than they want to be with them. And your book examines that phenomenon, actually.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I read that really drew me to this was Benjamin Franklin writing a letter to a friend that there were thousands of examples of settlers along the frontier who would run off to join the Indians, the Indian tribes.
Right.
And there wasn't one example of an Indian who ran off to join civilization. We say going native, but we don't say going civilized because no one wants to do it.
Right.
And so the soldiers who would rather be in combat in the dusty hills of Afghanistan with each other rather than coming back home, there's a historical precedent to that. And so my book, I get to veterans and soldiers at the end of my book. They're just one way that I use to look at the book is really about our society.
Really? Yeah.
That's one way that I use to look
at it. Right. And the fracturing of it. Really, I think at this all time high, and Memorial Day just happened. So it's obviously right in that time frame to be thinking about these things. But one of the things that I deal with a lot is PTSD in one of my friends, Tom, who has a traumatic brain injury from an IED. And I really love that you really put a perspective on PTSD. A lot of America hear that term, they think most soldiers have it, and it's hard. No, you really show that there's a couple kinds, that there's the short-term PTSD that any normal human being would have after going through any kind. I was run over by a car in November. My dog died in my arms. I tell you, I have some trauma from that incident.
Absolutely.
But it's a normal, it will wear off. I will get through it. It's not debilitating. And then there's the longer term, more debilitating PTSD. And in your book, you show us that, this PTSD, if they come back with it, it's not what we're thinking. It's not, they're not going to all run off and kill themselves. And, so they're going to work through it. They're going to get better. And they're going to need to reintegrate. And so to do that, we need to create a society that they can reintegrate into.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, studies show that only around 20% of people who've been traumatized get stuck in a kind of long-term trauma loop that can go on for years, long-term chronic PTSD.
Right.
PTSD is adaptive. It's a survival reaction to danger, and all mammals, not only all people, all mammals get it. The long-term reaction.
How do you work through yours? You've been in Afghanistan. You've been on the. I saw Restrepo. I saw Korngal. You've been out there. You've seen it. How did you get through yours?
Well, I mean, humans are adapted to deal with trauma and danger, and we heal ourselves. And that, for most people, with the passing of time, the symptoms diminish. And,
right.
and so I just wait. I mean, also, I didn't know, this was in a year before 9/11. I was with the Northern Alliance while they were fighting the Taliban. Back then, the Taliban had fighter planes and tanks, and
right.
we got walloped pretty hard. And
yeah.
I had no idea it was PTSD. I just thought I was going crazy.
Yeah. Well, as anyone would think so. What are you hoping that a lot of people are paying attention to the book. You're a notable author and documentarian, so it gets attention, and that's a good thing. So what are you hoping from Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging? What dialogue are you hoping to start?
Well, I wanted to write about the ancient human preference for community And what happens when you lose that in modern society? And
please don't tell me it takes a village. No, I'm just kidding. I'm really just kidding.
No, I'm going to tell you it takes a tribe.
Yeah, it takes a tribe.
Village isn't. Yeah, you got to up your game a bit.
Yeah.
No, and you know one thing I look at, which is really interesting, is what happens when you take modern society and collapse it. So during the Blitz and
Trump, when, that's, the what Blitz and, that's what happens. That's what happens.
No, actually. Actually, I would. I mean, I take your point on a humorous level, right. But actually, I don't think that's true. I mean, when you collapse a society, like for example, the Blitz in London,
yeah,
or an earthquake that I researched in Italy, yeah, what happens is people come together and become extremely generous.
Yes,
they act better than they do in normal times.
Post 9/11, I wrote an editorial for the HuffPost and for my book right afterwards. It was called Americans First - It Second. We stopped being gay American, black American, Itlo American, this American, that American, and we became Americans First for a couple days, and it felt really good.
Absolutely. That's great. That's a great essay. I mean, in New York, the suicide rate went down. The murder, violent crime rate went down. Even Vietnam vets with PTSD said that their symptoms improved after 9/11. During the Blitz in London, 30,000 people were killed by German bombs, but admissions to psychiatric wards went down during the bombings and then back up when the bombings stopped. So people respond in extremely psychologically healthy ways to danger, to stress, to hardship. And, you know, one of the ills of modern society is that along with the great blessing of affluence and stability and peace, you get a decline in mental health. I mean, that's the irony of modern society.
You know, George Hook, a presenter in Ireland, once told me a few years back, he's quite a card. He once told me that the Irish don't do prosperity well. They need to suffer in order to be a good society. That when they get money, things sort of go awry. And I sort of laughed at that. But there is some truth that when you're in a prosperous mode, you're not always the best of people. That adversity does bring out the best in us, usually, or sometimes.
Well, yeah, it's not just the Irish. I mean, it's just human beings. I mean, as wealth goes up in a society, the suicide rate goes up, the depression rate goes up. So yeah, it I mean, those are all, you know, affluence is great, but it does come with, I mean, humans are adapted, we're wired to deal with hardship and stress and danger.
Right.
So if you take those things away, we're living way outside of 2 million years of evolution, and we don't know how to do it very well.
And then they throw other things at us that aren't dangerous that we then... How do I say this? And I'm a journalist and a talk show host. We then perceive things to be our enemy or dangerous that really aren't dangerous because we really don't have much danger in our lives. So then suddenly things that aren't threats are seen as threats. And they're, you know, like Madonna doing a Prince tribute. Suddenly the world loses their mind because, you know, oh my God, start a petition. And it's like, calm down. you have more things to worry about. Sebastian Jaeger, I could talk to you forever. I'm very glad that I got to talk to you again. The first time was with Restrepo when I was on KGO and loved the film and Korngal. And I got to make a lot of veteran friends through my show. I even knew American Cypress. Chris, he came on the show and we became friends. And so I've been very blessed to meet a lot of people who have served and who have come back and told their stories, or people who have been right there in front and telling these stories. And the story of our soldiers and of our wars is a story of our society. It directly plays into who we are as a people as to why we're sending them. So it's a great read. It's Tribe on Becoming and Belonging. You need to read it. And please go out and get it. Thank you. I know I only had you for 14 minutes, so I'm gonna be a good journalist and get you out of here. But thank you so very much for joining me again.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely. You can follow him on Twitter, and you should. It's at Sebastian Junger, J-U-N-G-E-R. When you're not hungover, you can say it properly. But hey, I'm on vacation this week, so woo! And go get his book, and you'll, I think it's hopeful. Would you say your book is hopeful? I think it's hopeful.
Oh, it's extremely hopeful.
Yeah, I think it's...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think
no, it's it shows a way, I think.
Absolutely. So go get it. I am Corral. We'll be back right after this.
Are you watching me now? Oh, that was the end of A Star Is Born. I fell in love with Barbara Streisand. Well, you can fall in love with me every single day at reallycorral.com at noon. That's reallycorral.com and at facebook.com/reallycorral. Watch me each and every day at noon.
It is
the Corralcast. I am Corral. Now, y'all know I don't normally play country, but I've met Kick Brooks, actually. A very nice guy. But the song is so appropriate. You know, I went to the Long Beach Grand Prix. The audio is all over the show this week, and I had a grand time. But one of the coolest things about going was I went on a brand new Indian classic motorcycle, and it is an instant classic. I got honked at, and not because I was doing anything wrong. I got thumbs up. I got high fives, and everybody had to come over to see the bike and say something about it. When I parked it with over 200 other motorcycles, it stood out. Indian is making new motorcycles. And before I go to Robert, I want to tell you why I'm so passionate about it. I saw a movie called Why We Ride, which you should all see. It explains why I'm a motorcyclist. And I found out that Indian was the very first motorcycle company in America. And at a time when America is kind of down, that meant something to me. And then I found out that they're also made or were made in Springfield, Massachusetts. And the New England Genealogical Society researched my lineage, and they found out that my grandparents and great-grandparents and many of my line came from Springfield, Massachusetts. I don't know if any of them worked for Indian, but hey, there's a very real chance they could have. So I wanted to get on one of the bikes, and Robert Pandia has made sure that I have. He is in charge of external relations there and PR with Indian, and he's here right now to talk about this reintroduction, really, of an American classic motorcycle. And if you are a motorcyclist, do yourself a favor, find one, go get on one, ride one. You're going to be really impressed. Robert, let's talk about this, because this is not just a motorcycle reintroduction. It's also a reintroduction of a philosophy.
Yeah, that's right. I'm glad you had a great time on the bike, and really, you're exactly right. You know, we're bringing a new choice.
Had a great time, honey. The bike's still in the garage, and I ain't giving you all my address. I'm just telling you.
We have people.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's been, you know, I mean, this is history, is what it boils down to, and we're really excited to bring a product back that...
Why did it go away?
That really speaks to, it speaks to the quality of the name. It went away because of some bad management back in the day. They also had an overcommitment to the military. They made a lot of war bikes for our allied forces overseas during World War II. They didn't make a whole lot of production motorcycles, so the dealers in the States didn't have bikes to sell. And so ended up in the early 50s, by 1953, that combination of all that stuff kind of put them out of order. But I think the thing that's important is that Indian Motorcycle never really left American consciousness. It's always been this cool brand. It's always been something that has been associated with it. So it's,
now,
it's really
let's
nice
talk
that we
about,
can bring it back to market, right?
Let's talk about the new ones, even though they look like the old ones. The classic that I'm on with the white wall tires, it looks like it should just, it looks like it could come out of a parade from the 1950s. But it's not just pretty. It's got a Polaris engine. Polaris made in the United States. So Indian is sticking with its made in the USA philosophy, even with the reintroduction.
Yeah, that's right. It's a full-on Indian engine. It's not shared with any other Polaris product. Polaris is a parent company, but, you know, we treat Indian as its own brand, and it's a fantastic power plant. I mean, you wrote it.
Oh, my God. I can't even tell you how much power is in this thing. It's 111 cubic inches. And now I know that, which is amazing, because I'm suddenly turning into a lesbian or something. But, I mean, it's got all this chrome. It is powerful. It rides just so... Finally, a seat that fits my ass. You know, it really is an incredible thing. But more importantly, you do feel like you're writing history. Let me ask you the number one question everyone's been asking me. So before we go, I got to ask you. There's the three models, the classic, the chief, the chieftain. What's the price range on the reintroduction? How much do they go for?
That's a great question. We really fought hard to bring them at an accessible price point. So we started $18,999 for the classic. And then the chieftain on the highest end of the range is $22,999.
And no one believed that, by the way. No one believed that. I told people were looking at this bike at the Grand Prix, the workers, the race car drivers. They're all, well, how much is this? I said, this bike right now, as you see it, $19,000. They're like, no. I go, yeah, the price of a Yaris. And they're like, no. And I'm like, yes. And they wouldn't believe it. And I said, the high end one, you can walk out the door 23, and that's all decked out. And they really wouldn't believe it, because they were looking at something and they saw such, you know, I'm a fan. I just have to tell you, my listeners know when I become a fan of something, I become an evangelist, and I will own one of these bikes one day. I'll be proud to drive one of these bikes one day, and other, you know, like for myself. And I think if anyone's a biker, they should go out and check them out. Robert Pandia, there's going to be dealers everywhere, but right now they can go on the web, correct? And they can take a look at these.
That's right. It's IndianMotorcycle.com, and we've got a new dealer in Orange County. There's a dealer down in San Diego.
And there's one in San Francisco. There's certainly one in San Francisco. I know he's outside of, I think he's out by Livermore or somewhere, but there is a dealer.
Yeah, out in Dublin. It's Arlen Ness.
Yes,
so,
Dublin.
Who else would you want to buy a bike from?
Exactly. So right there in Dublin, they can go and they can look at these bikes. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for putting me on this bike and explaining a little bit about it. It is a piece of history coming back to America, and I couldn't be happier. Thank you so much, Robert, for joining us.
Thanks. Take care, Carol.
I am Carol. Don't go anywhere except to my website, where you can see photos of the bike at thekdw.com.
Listen to the